everybody. This is Debbie Guy-Gish with the Pettawitz Group, and welcome to WRMR, Revenue Marketing Radio for Revenue Marketing Leaders. We meet twice a month to talk to real revenue marketers and to learn their tips and tricks on how they've made that transition, or really the transformation, from being traditional marketers to revenue marketers. And before I introduce our guest today, I would like to take a moment to define the term revenue marketing for some of our newer listeners. For us at the Pettawitz Group, revenue marketing is just the process of transforming marketing from being a cost center to a revenue center. And as I've worked with marketers across the country and around the globe, I find that every B2B marketer is feeling some kind of pressure for revenue accountability or some type of financial metric. And very simply, revenue marketing is that discipline that helps achieve this level of financial accountability. And what I like about our show is that it's a very practical show. I mean, all our revenue marketers on the show are practicing revenue marketers, and they're here to very openly and honestly share with all of us what works, what does not work, and their own gotchas or those hidden roadblocks. Now, I'm very excited for two reasons today. First of all, I have my good friend and longtime serial marketer, Patty Foley Reed, on the show. I'm also very excited about her topic, and I love it so much I just have to give you guys a description. Today's program is for revenue-focused marketers who already have a synergistic revenue relationship with sales. Patty is here today, and she's going to be sharing her insights about the value of passing sales intelligence, not just leads. And I love this topic because I think marketers in general fall very, very short. They're sitting on a data goldmine about prospect and client behavior, yet little of that ever makes its way out of marketing. It's into sales, and then sales using it in a productive way. However, when it does happen, we see shorter sales cycles, we see higher average deal sizes, and we also see more reps meeting quota. So with that as an introduction, I would like to welcome my good friend, Patty Foley Reed, Director of Solutions Marketing and Demand Generation at Veracode, to the show. Welcome, Patty.
Thanks, Debbie. I'm thrilled to be here and happy to share my pain.
So one of the very first things that I'll say about Patty is that she's an SRM, which stands for Serial Revenue Marketer, and there are a handful of those kind of folks around the company. So why don't you begin, Patty, by telling us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Patty Foley Reed. My friends call me PFR, and I've been doing marketing for over 20 years now. So I've been in the Boston area that whole time, and I've worked at, you know, giant Fortune 500 companies, and I've been among the first 50 people at really small tech startup companies. And like Debbie said, I'm really passionate about revenue marketing, and I'll say I'm not happy until I know the impact of my work and my team's work from marketing on revenue. And, you know, we work really hard to make sure that we have that clear line of impact so that we can describe it to our team and then also describe it to the business.
So I think, Patty, you and I met probably, gosh, I bet it was probably around 2011. It could have been 2010, and that's when you were at Iron Mountain. And Patty is one of those 26 leaders that I interviewed for my book, Rise of the Revenue Marketer. And what is very interesting, if you go back and if you read her interview in the book, even then she was talking about how marketing needs to do a better job of working with sales. And she had a lot of very practical advice for how to do that. And I think since 2010, 2011, and certainly since 2013, I think a lot has changed in marketing. But, Patty, a lot still has not changed in marketing. And I think one of the things, as I look at 2016, that I'm still so disappointed in is how much more marketing could be doing to help sales, and yet it's not there. And I think top on that list is passing intelligence. So when you say passing intelligence to sales, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I think a lot about, you know, the process of passing leads and how we've been doing things for years and years. And I honestly believe that we have to totally rethink that entire process, and that I'm suggesting that instead of passing leads, that we need to get better at passing intelligence. For a long time, we've been working on account-based marketing, and I really think that leads are about, you know, the individuals and, you know, the actions that an individual is taking. But, you know, in B2B, it's really, you know, a buying team. And with all the data that we have now, I really think that it's, you know, inexcusable that we're not really packaging that up in a really actionable way and giving that intelligence to sales. But I admit, you know, it's not hard. I mean, it is. I admit actually that it is hard. But I really believe that that's what it has to change in marketing.
First of all, I love this idea of just stop passing leads, and I love your comments around rethinking the process. Rather than passing leads, let's also pass intelligence. And so I also agree it's kind of inexcusable given the systems and the technology and our understanding of how sales and marketing should be working together that it's really not happening more. So what do you think is getting in the way, number one, Patty? And number two, can you walk us through how you have accomplished this?
Yeah. I think, so first, what I think is getting in the way is the, you know, just the process that we're all comfortable with and that we've been using for so long. I've described passing leads as, I don't know, have you ever seen this I Love Lucy show where they're in that chocolate factory?
I have.
So this is how I envision, you know, our marketing development reps who are, like, qualifying our leads. You know, I feel like they're standing at this conveyor belt, you know, one by one, you know, picking up the chocolate or picking up our lead and, you know, kind of assessing it and passing it on. And what's funny about the I Love Lucy show and also about passing leads is, you know, once that conveyor belt really starts ramping up, you know, things start to go haywire. For marketing, you know, it's great that the volume is increasing, but there is a lot that really gets lost. You know, in the show, they start, you know, pulling stuff off the conveyor belt and putting it in their hat, stuffing it in their mouth, down their shirts. And for me, that's how I envision, you know, people that are qualifying leads. There's just too much coming at them, and they don't have the broader context. So they're just taking them off the conveyor belt, throwing them away, disqualifying them, or, you know, just leaving leads to die. And it's no discredit to the work that they're doing, but I think, you know, marketing has a responsibility to better enable them with more context. And that's the intelligence that I'm talking about, like why it's important to not disqualify certain leads despite it not being the dream target title or not being the most engaged action that we'd like them to take. I think if you take somebody without the exact title or the right action in the context of a lot of other activity from other people in the company, you might look at that lead a lot differently.
So let's take this a little bit at a time, Patty, because you kind of covered a lot of territory there, and I'd like to break it down and get a little bit more practical advice. First of all, I do agree that a lot of our marketing development reps or sales development reps, whatever you want to call them, really there is a lot coming at them, and that's for those companies who even have that function. And I do think that they're kind of drowning. And I also think that just with simple lead scoring, we simply are not applying enough context. And there's
right.
really no – it's just a little bit – it's a little bit like just – stop the craziness, right? That's almost to the point that we are right now. And so how do you take an organization that's passing leads, and then how do you transform them to and or passing intelligence? What does that transformation look like?
Yeah, I would say a big part of it is account-based marketing, to be totally honest with you. I think, you know, recently – you know, the companies I've been working at and, you know, a lot of my peers, they're putting more and more focus on account-based marketing. And I think it's when the business and marketing really understands which accounts matter, like which prospects matter, then marketing has the ability to get really focused and to watch those accounts, for example, differently than they could possibly ever watch, you know, thousands and thousands of accounts. So I think that big shift is really key to, you know, how and why marketing or packaging marketing intelligence becomes even more tangible.
I would agree. And how long have you guys been applying account-based marketing methods at your company?
Yeah, so I've been doing account-based marketing for well over 5 years. And ever since I've been at the company I'm at now, we've always focused on, well, actually, when I first started, we made the shift to account-based marketing. And I can tell you that, you know, year over year, we've increased the number of opportunities that are sourced through marketing, you know, over 300%. And,
wow.
You know, nothing makes me crazier than spreading marketing resources thin. So, you know, I work really hard with the business to really know what matters and to understand, you know, where we're going to put our resources.
Well, that kind of brings up another question, Patty, and it's just not a function of, you know, stop passing leads, start passing intelligence, focus more on account-based marketing. It's also about marketing's ability to tell the rest of the organization no. You know, what are you going to stop doing so that you can have a conversation around what matters to the business so you can make an impact? So how do you say no to the things that the organization kind of expects you to do? Not that
yeah.
You have a problem saying no, Patty.
What's that?
Not that you have a problem saying no.
Yeah, it comes up constantly, and I'll admit it's not easy. But I think when you have the data, you really equip yourself to say no, and that you can help the business really help themselves by getting more focused on the accounts that really matter. So, for example, when we really look at, you know, all of our targets, they're not all created equal. The lifetime value of, let's say, Global 2000 companies is millions and millions and millions of dollars greater than, you know, some of the mid-market companies. So we could spend all day long just doing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of transactions year after year. But for us, like many other companies, you know, we have a recurring revenue model. So the value in landing the right companies and getting the benefit of that recurring revenue year after year is, you know, just makes a giant difference.
I know, Patty, in your prior company, and even as part of Rep Talks and some other things that we've done together, I know that you've always talked about approaching marketing like managing a portfolio, right? So you want to put
yep.
more money and more effort into those areas of the business that are performing well, and you want to disinvest in those areas that are not performing well. So is that still kind of like a portfolio approach that you're taking?
Yeah, and it's constantly, you know, getting more and more granular so we understand, you know, let's say, where do we need in-year revenue versus where are our growth areas? And how do we, you know, distribute our resources against those two objectives? And making sure we have total clarity on the business strategy and the sales revenue goals so that we can do that effectively.
And I would challenge any marketer listening to this broadcast, if you're not aligned with the business strategy and the sales revenue goals, you can't begin to think about being a revenue marketer. I think that's just a given, you know, that's just like the most foundational thing that you have to do. I want to go back to focusing on account-based marketing, Patty. And so, again, you've made the transition in your current company, and I find that a lot of sales reps are, even though they don't like the leads they're typically getting from sales, they don't want you to take those leads away either. You know, they just want them to have, they want them there just in case they need to pick up the phone and call somebody. So I would imagine that with this approach, you have fewer leads, but they're higher quality, bigger deal size, higher propensity to close. So So how do you transition a sales organization who's been accustomed to a lead flow to more of a account-based marketing and value flow?
Yeah, it's definitely that alignment and that constant communication. And, you know, what I've found recently at the last two companies I've worked for is that, you know, really refining your demand funnel. And I'll give you a specific example of where the critical juncture in the handoff from marketing to sales, increasing that conversion can have dramatic results on the bottom line. So to illustrate that to the business, you know, I've literally done like before and after. I'll say, oh, that's great. You know, we have so many opportunities that are converting at this rate. And I know that the benchmark and industry averages, you know, we're good, but we could get a lot better. So let me just illustrate just in simple math to say, if that conversion rate just increased a few percentages, you know, that has tremendous impact on the revenue that we'd be generating. So with that as the backdrop, we go in and we really put a lot of emphasis on that handoff and operationalizing that handoff to make sure that it's optimized, that it's monitored, and that it's continually improving. And, you know, it gets very, very tactical and detailed, you know, how you do that with the systems, how you make agreements with sales around SLAs, and how you, you know, it's really a valve. You got to go back and forth and keep adjusting that valve to optimize it.
But I love it. I've never heard anybody call it a valve before, Patty, but I think that's exactly what it is. I mean, these are things that people talk about all the time. You've got to have the relationship. You've got to operationalize that marketing to sales handoff process. People have to be on board. You know, you have to do all those things. What have you done differently that this is actually working? What do you think your secret sauce is?
I think it is adjusting the valve and having the data to do the back and forth. So, for example, in that, you know, handoff scenario, you know, we really ask the salespeople to put in the system exactly why, you know, these things weren't qualifying. And, you know, what we thought would have been a qualified opportunity that should have closed, you know, it illustrates, you know, how we can help affect it. You know, so for example, you know, is there just not enough urgency at the company in order to transition from opportunity to close? So, like, how do we help the salespeople increase urgency at the company? Or is it that we're not able to demonstrate ROI? And, you know, do we need a sales enablement tool? Or is it a competitive situation? So by having the data, we can really figure out how to optimize it. And I really think until we really forced it into the system where we could look back at it and say, oh, wow, like 30% of these are not converting for competitive reasons. Let's get after that.
So, Patty, how do you because it sounds like in your company, in order for marketing to be passing sales intelligence to sales, to be effective in account-based marketing, that marketing has to understand a lot about sales and has to be constantly engaged in understanding the business of sales and their goals. How does sales view you when you're trying to have that kind of conversation with them?
How do they use us for that conversation?
How do they think of marketing when you have that kind of, you know, when you begin a sales dialogue with them about their process and leads? I mean, how do they view marketing within your company?
Yeah, there's definitely an increased appreciation for marketing. And like any relationship, I mean, we need to constantly bring value. And I think that's why we're battle testing the intelligence that we're bringing to our salespeople to say, you know, does this tell you something that you didn't know? Or does this really not help because you're getting in too early? Or how could we package the intelligence in such a way that it becomes more actionable for you? I think
I love
one
that.
Of the problems.
Yep.
Yeah, one of the problems we've had in the past, and I totally get it, is that when we pass, you know, random bits of intelligence or random leads, it's impossible for someone who's just like rapidly qualifying leads to really, you know, see the forest through the trees. So when we pass them that intelligence or that lead, it really needs to be in the context of what else is going on. Who else in the business is also engaging? You know, what other dynamics are out there that might inform, you know, the qualification of that particular opportunity? And it's,
well, let's talk about
packaging that up, I would say, is
a
big challenge.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think this is where people really fall down. And so let's talk about packaging the actionable intelligence. And you refer to it as really the context of what is going on. Can you give us some examples of the context that you provide? You gave us a few, but give us a few more. And how you actually package that up and how sales gets it, how they look at it, and what they do with it.
Yep. So what we have done is, you know, what I refer to as marketing forensics. And we go back and we look at deals that have closed so that people can, you know, see that forest. They can understand who all has been involved. Let's say even we have a long sales cycle, even for the past year. So what title types are getting involved? You know, what content are they downloading? What type of tactics, you know, where it ranges from somebody downloads a white paper from our website, we meet them at a trade show, they come to a face-to-face event, like a dinner event or something that we're doing. And you can see, when you illustrate it that way, how it gets closer and closer to close revenue. So we use that as a backdrop to say, all right, this is what good looks like. This is where, how opportunity or closed deals have played out in the past. So we use that as a backdrop to say, when we see signals like that and we bring them to you, you know, that's a time and place for sales to get engaged. And it's because we have that forensics that we've already done to understand what good looks like, to say we recognize the signals and they're lighting up here. So this is now is the time to engage in this particular opportunity.
So, Patty, what would you say is the difference between, I mean, how do you separate signals from the noise?
Yeah, I think we've put a lot of effort into things like trigger events and understanding there's companies that are researching, you know, what we're doing, and they'll come to us naturally. But there's really big trigger events where sales cycles get really accelerated, and companies will spend, the average order size is, you know, 2 and 3 times larger than our typical average order size. So we're constantly trying to get better and better informed about what those trigger events are and how to identify them. So, you know, for our company and for many others, you know, things like an M&A or, you know, let's say a breach. You know, this is when corporate wallets really begin to loosen up. And, you know, we've used the analogy to say, you know, money literally does fall from the sky, and you want to be there to get your fair share. But you have to pick up that signal or you're going to miss it. And I think as, you know, we compete with really big companies, so we have to be really smart and agile about how we're picking up those signals.
So one of the things that, Patty, you and I didn't talk about as we were preparing for this interview, but it has come up recently in a number of shows, and also we recently at the Pedowitz Group had our first customer advisory board, and it certainly came up, and that is, in order to build and run this kind of revenue marketing machine so that you are an instrument of revenue to the business, so that you're aligned with the business goals and you're aligned to the sales revenue, so that you actually make an impact, how do you find the marketing talent? How do you find marketers who understand sales, can talk about sales? Because when I hear you talk, it sounds like a VP of sales is actually talking, because you know so much about what's going on in sales. So how do you find the marketing talent who can work in that kind of environment?
I think you know, strong leadership is very critical. And I believe that, you know, like as a marketing leader, it's my responsibility to make sure that I provide ultra clarity to the team, you know, even very junior people, about why they're doing what they're doing, and making sure that they understand that when you do this, I want them to be able to see the revenue needle move. So the closer I can get them to seeing that needle move, the better work I can get out of them. So to your question about, like, talent, I think, like, strong leadership is necessary with ultra-clear, focused goals. And that when that's in place, then, you know, you can bring along more junior people and, you know, show them the way. So I think that's where, you know, as long as you have strong leadership in place, you can bring more junior marketers along.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and that's one of the key themes that we're seeing right now. Because, you know, as we sit here in 2016, there's a whole group of very good revenue marketing leaders, you know, across the globe. They've done this in more than one or two or three companies. They've built the machines, they've run the machines, and they have actually seen the revenue impact that they can have. So when you start with that kind of leadership, I think it's much easier. And also, Patty, because you've been doing this for so long and you've been doing it for so well, I think that you're more positioned than a lot of organizations to do what I consider to be the more sophisticated elements of revenue marketing, which is really account-based marketing, which I consider to be very sophisticated, and just the whole idea of passing intelligence versus passing leads. So if someone doesn't have your years of experience, Patty, how do they get started with this?
I think it's really just focusing on the revenue. Like, I asked somebody for advice, and they're like, so this was a CEO at a big giant company, and, you know, his advice was, he's like, just always stay close to the revenue. And I think a new leader, like somebody who just map all the work you're doing to the revenue. And there's only so many dial movers, so it's honestly not, I mean, it's complicated to implement, but it's not that complicated to figure out. Because the dial movers are the volume that you're driving from a demand awareness perspective, you know, how that converts, your average order size, and then it's the velocity at which you can, you know, go from lead to close, or from intelligence trigger to close. So once you figure that out, say, you know, how much revenue I need at what conversion rates drives what sort of volume, and then you've really got to understand that. And then what we've done in many places is then kind of cut that data by sales team, by segment, by region, by verticals, and that's when it gets to be really sophisticated, where you can say, wow, the conversion rates of our, let's say, named accounts is that much higher than our mid-market. And that's where you can make a case to put more revenue on your, let's say, named accounts versus mid-market. Otherwise, you're just spreading yourself thin.
Patty, yeah, Patty, you make it sound so easy. It's crazy. Every time I talk to you, you make it sound easy. And I know for you, you've been successful in doing it. So let's go to a couple of callers. Let's see. Let's take a call from Allison. Allison, you're on the air. Would you like to ask Patty a question?
Yeah. Can y'all hear me okay?
We can, Allison. Go ahead.
I was wondering, how do you structure the team to align with sales?
Yep.
That's a great question.
Yeah. So, for example, the demand team is aligned with the sales segment. So, for example, we have a named account team, a mid-market team, and we specifically align those individuals with those sales teams. So they become the liaison with that sales team. And then in the spirit of, shared goals, we make sure that those individuals understand what that segment's sales goal is. And, everybody wins when the segment's, reaches their revenue goals and they have clarity on how they back that up to their opportunities that are required and how marketing contributes a certain percentage of that. So that's the way I've seen it done at quite a few companies and that I've done it to make sure that you have those shared goals and that tight alignment.
I think that's great. And again, one thing I'll say about Patty, because I've worked with her and known her as a revenue marketer for a number of years, I think that's one of her critical success factors is ensuring that her team is structured to meet those revenue marketing goals. Because when you can do that, you really, truly can be successful. And so, Patty, last question. What are really some of your critical success factors? How would you describe those?
Yeah, if I had to put it in one word, it's focus. And I think it's knowing what the business strategy is and what the sales are, goals are, so that you can align to it. So that's one big piece of it. The second big piece of it as a critical success factor is to know, I call it the pipeline analytics. Like, know exactly how well you're doing and benchmark that against of how much better you could get. So you understand where the gaps are and you know which valves throughout that funnel really need to be optimized so that you can focus on those particular areas, again, rather than spreading yourself so thin, just constantly filling the top of the funnel.
And I think those are great critical success factors, and I agree, because as long as marketing is doing a lot of activities, it's death by a thousand cuts. But once you say we're going to become a revenue marketing machine, instantly everyone has focus on the same thing. And, of course, that kind of focus gets expressed through your pipeline analytics. And I do have one more question, and this just came up recently in a couple of conversations that I've been having. But, Patty, there's all kinds of new terms in our industry that kind of describes what marketers are doing today. One of the terms floating around, of course, is revenue marketing, which is what we've been talking about the Pettiwood Scoop for a long time. But modern marketing is also a phrase that's used to describe what's going on in marketing. And even growth marketing, Scott Brinker's new book, Hacking Marketing, it's all about growth marketing. So when you think about those terms, how do those resonate with you, and what do you think is the role of marketing, and what term would you use to describe what marketing should be doing and is doing today? Is it modern marketing, growth marketing, revenue marketing, some combination? Because I feel like if you can name it, then you can be it. So what are your thoughts on that?
I would say it's growth marketing through revenue marketing. Like, I want to be able to tell the business exactly what the impact of marketing is on the company's growth and to give the business confidence that we have a repeatable recipe where we can, constantly optimize and get better and better to support that growth. So that's, for me, when you've arrived, when you have the data, when you have it repeatable, and that the business can turn to marketing as a growth driver.
I love that. I think that is an awesome answer and just a great way to put it. So anyway, well, our time is up. Patty, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Thanks so much for having me.
And everyone, please plan to join us. We meet about twice a month, and you can go to the PettiwoodsGroup.com website and take a look at upcoming interviews. You can also take a look at the show at Revenue Marketer Radio. Please plan to join us in the future. Remember, you can download all of these interviews from iTunes or listen from your computer at Revenue Marketer Radio. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Patty. And remember, it is a great day to be a revenue marketer, and see you next time.